You're listening to the Rubber Chickens Unleashed.
It's third and goal from the Carolina one. Scott the lone back in the backfield. 4 seconds left on the play clock. Nelson, shotgun snap, looking left side. Fade route. And is it picked off? It is! Gamecock turnover. Interception, Carolina in their own south end zone. Oh my, what a play. They threaten again. They're denied again. A touchdown. Jamarcus King, his first interception as a Gamecocks. He spoils the East Carolina drive. Eighth play of the drive for Nelson. Here comes Carolina on a blitz. Nelson's got time in the pocket. Throws in a flats. And this one picked off. He's picked off by Chris Lamons. The second one of this ball game. Nelson again's got it in the red zone. Carolina's had three straight drives where they've been able to shut him out inside this 10-yard line. They're going to run it with Scott to the right side. He fumbles the football. The ball's in the end zone. Are you kidding me? The Gamecocks have got it again. There's a golden horseshoe, and they dug it up at Williams-Brice Stadium. The fourth drive in a row where they get a turnover or a stop, and the Pirates get it inside the 10 again and come up with no points.
T-Bone.
Yeah.
G-Man. Are y'all ready for another episode of TRC Unleashed?
Unleash me, baby.
Do you know what number this is?
89.
89. It is 89. You know who wears number 89 for the Gamecocks?
That would be Brian Edwards.
Brian Edwards, super freshman. Hey, welcome everybody. This is TRC Unleashed. This is, as you just heard, is episode number 89. I am your host, Buck. I've got T-Bone and the G-Man on the line with me. And, guys, do y'all know how many Gamecock podcasts there are out there?
I think 15.
I counted the other day, I counted eight that I knew of that either are don't exist anymore or still going. It's like from the beginning of time, I counted like eight. And then like the next day, some yahoos announced, "Hey, we're doing our first Gamecock podcast tomorrow. Yeah, come, you know." So it's like, I remember, I think Leftover Hot Dog was the first one.
Oh man, I forgot about Leftover Hot Dog.
LOHD, baby. And they used to do like a round table. They'd have like 12 people on their podcast, right, just talking Gamecock football. And then I think we started about the same time that Half Cock did. And then, surprisingly, you know, the big boys, Gamecock Central and the Big Spur didn't really start. The Big Spur didn't start till recently. I mean, like a couple of months ago. But, yeah, there's lots of people out there talking about Gamecock sports. So we're happy to have you with us.
And so let me ask you this. Have we done the most Gamecock podcast any other podcast?
No, not even close. Half-cocked is over 100. They've got like 140 or something like that.
Are we second?
I'd be willing to bet we're probably second.
That should be our tagline. We are the second most podcasting
number two
and out there.
What is it?
Well, we got to like step it up, man. We're like 60 podcasts behind.
Well, they used to do two a week. They would do a post game and then like a pregame, and I mean those guys
must not have anything else to do.
Right. Well, that was before they were married and all that kind of stuff. I don't think they have any kids yet, but and George is still not married. But that cat can play a banderilla, can he?
Can he?
Man, can he? I saw a little excerpt of someone who was playing just the other night. Excelente.
Yeah. I didn't even know. I'd ask him if that was a ukulele he was playing, jokingly. I think he thought I actually thought that was a ukulele. But hey, what are we here for? We're here to talk about football. So you guys got to see the debut of one Brandon McIlwain at quarterback on Saturday. So, first of all, any tailgating stories? Anything exciting happen? I know it was what, Parents Weekend? You guys probably didn't get too wild, did you?
Nah.
Did your kids tailgate with you? Did you? This is getting weird because neither one of you texted me like the whole day. You know, G-Man texted me a couple of times during the game. Y'all are usually like, hey, we're here together, having a beer, blah, doing this, doing that. Oh, man, look over here. And I got nothing out of you. Now I'm asking about it, and you're both just like staring at me like, I mean.
What?
Did you kiss or something? And it's like awkward.
You didn't even give us a chance to talk. You were like, you know, running off of the mouth over there. We tailgated. T-Bone brought his kids to the tailgate. My kids were not there.
Even though it was Parents Weekend and your son is a student there?
Well, he had his own thing going. He had one of his bands he plays in had a gig at another tailgate spot.
Oh, wow.
They were rocking and rolling over there at their tailgate spot. I was hosting T-Bone and family plus my normal tailgate crowd. So I was at my spot. It was a nice tailgate. Would you agree, right. T-Bone?
It was a very nice tailgate. It was a great spread. There was some kind of, I'd say, chicken salad sandwiches. There were wings. There was a vegetable tray. There were desserts. Had a TV set up. Lots of beverages of all shapes and sizes.
Right, right.
We walk up and my youngest one looks at this entire spread and looks at me and says, what are the chances I got a football here? He's early teens, and so nothing is good enough for him.
And he was bored to death the whole time.
Right. We did watch Louisville kill Florida State. We did watch
I mean, people are talking about it like all day, every day, and I still don't think people are talking about that enough. I mean, you could have a Louisville, you know, Hammers Florida State channel, and I would watch it. I mean, I would just watch. We're
standing there watching it, and G-Man looks at me and he says, "You know what this means, don't you?" And I said, "What?" And he said, "We should have hired Petrino. We should have hired Petrino. We should have taken whatever negativity came with it. You know, been on probation, been the laughing stock of football, but maybe we could hang 63 on somebody. Who could we hang 63 on now?"
There is. I would venture to say there is not a college team, FBS or FCS, that we could hang 63 on right now.
I think you're right.
I think there's a few we might get to 50, but 63, man, and Lamar Jackson, just give him the Heisman. And
hang 63 on somebody by himself. I mean,
give him the Heisman because I don't want Deshaun Watson to win it. So. Don't want to have to hear those people.
Hey, when is that game, by the way? When is that showdown with Louisville for them?
2 weeks? I want to say it's 2 weeks.
Yeah, they got Tech this week.
Thursday night, yeah. Yeah, so yeah, I think they've got a couple of extra days to prepare for Lamar Jackson, who second coming of Michael Vick, apparently. I don't know. I know you guys don't read or look at anything Rubber Chickens related, but I actually wrote that the first week. I said that watch out for Louisville in the ACC, and Lamar Jackson is the closest thing to Michael Vick we've had since Michael Vick.
I got a question.
Yeah,
I got a question. What's the Rubber Chickens again?
It's a website. It's a blog.
Oh.
The rubberchickensblog.com. Follow us on Twitter at @RUBRChickens. We're the home of the is the SEC butt ratings.
Yeah, that's really taken on a life of its own.
I'm a little concerned.
In a lot of ways, the butt rankings are butt.
They are. Well, I'm
total butt.
I'm concerned now because we're only 3 weeks into the season, and I really think it's played out. I don't know that I have any new ideas on how to call teams, but. So anyway, back to the game. How was the crowd? Good crowd?
It was, I wouldn't say a little below average.
Yeah, it was extremely hot. Extremely hot and middle afternoon game, late arriving crowd. I was up amongst the parents, So there are a lot of people up there that were had strange accents and were complaining about everything and had driven several hours from a higher latitude, if you know what I mean.
They didn't care. Didn't care anything about football at all.
No. And there was a lot of, you know, do these guys ever play Ohio State? A lot of questions like that.
Excuse me. Is it always this hot at these games? Jeez. Oh,
He's one of the
He was one of the Yankees that came down.
He was sitting on the other side.
Well, I guess
that's such a Yankee name too. It's such a Yankee name.
T-Bone's hey, over in the hey, Phil. In the East Upper, right? Put it this way: you could have shot a cannon into the East Upper in the second half and not killed anybody.
Now, is the East Upper the side that gets all the sun?
Yes.
Yeah, it is. And the other thing is, if you'd shot a cannon into East Upper, we were given a 15-yard cushion up there anyway. So,
yeah, the crowd was
telling you to back off.
Great. I mean, it was okay, you know, okay, but it was good enough. It was a home game, you know. You could tell we had the home field advantage.
So. Game starts out immediately. A.J. Turner with what, an 80-yard return?
Right.
Were y'all, I mean, that was fantastic. Loved it. Were y'all a little disappointed he got ran down from behind?
Yeah, very.
It really wasn't even an angle situation either. That mm-hmm. dude was just faster than him. I think the other guy would have caught him if that guy hadn't caught him. So a little disappointed in that, but, you know.
Man,
G-Man's tough crowd. You're damn right it's a tough crowd. We've had one touchdown return, one kickoff return for touchdown in the last 20 years. I'd like to have a second. I want somebody fast enough to get me a second touchdown return. So then B-Mac comes in, first play, what we were begging for the rest of the game. He keeps on the option, on the read option, untouched into the end zone. East Carolina punts to us. Offense is clicking, looks good. We go up 14-0. Chris LeMons gets a sack and a fumble. We get the ball back, and we're up 17-0 in the first 7 minutes. Let me ask you this. On a scale of 1 to 10, how comfortable did you feel with that 17-0 lead?
2.
About a 2?
Yeah.
I got to be honest. I want to act like I'm – you know, sophisticated and know all and was not, but no, I was jacked. I was thinking it was going to be like the last time we played East Carolina at home and we were going to hang 40 something on them. And, you know, pretty quickly when they started moving the ball, I started getting concerned.
But.
You mean when that guy started catching the first or second or third of his 22 catches on the day?
In fairness, all of those catches were uncontested.
Right.
Guys, let's just stop for a second. Let that sink in. 22 catches. There's guys who don't get 22 catches in their entire career.
Do we have 22 completions so far this summer, this season, over the course of three games? I think we probably do.
But do you know what the long was? What was his longest catch?
I don't know. But
he caught 2,280-something yards. It couldn't have been more than about 20 yards.
His longest was 15.
Was it really? Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. I mean, so he caught a lot of dink and dunks. Now, granted, it seemed like they were all on 3rd and 10.
Right.
Well, they that's the same offense they always run. It's like they change coaches, but they run the exact same offense.
Right, right.
And, I mean, nothing changes. I mean, everything is the same. Now, I mean, I wasn't super concerned because they didn't have a great running game. And every time they get inside the 20, you know, you kind of just felt like something was going to go wrong. And it did. Yeah. You know?
And so, I mean, I actually said that before halftime to some of the gathered visiting hairy people that were around me.
Ken and all his friends.
Yeah, whoever that guy was and all his friends. When they were complaining about that and how they didn't play football like that up north, I explained to them. You know. Guys, part of this is the way that a spread offense works. And so I felt pretty good about that every time we would get a pick or something like that. You know, I looked kind of like a genius.
You just sound like, I told you so.
They're like, hey, where's the fullback? Where's the fullback?
Where's the fullback dive?
Right.
3 yards in a cloud of dust. Come on. But, so, yeah, I mean, I never felt – I don't know why, but it's like I never felt that concerned about – I just kept thinking that we were going to make a play, even though it was kind of ridiculous. Like, every time we got into 3rd and 10, they either completed it or we got a PI penalty.
And that's actually something we should talk about. You know, I had my vantage point, granted, not a TV vantage point, an east upper squinting through the blazing sun and hairy Yankees vantage point that I had. but what was up with those pass interference calls, and did they seem one-sided?
The one towards the end of the game on Fenton was one of the worst calls I've ever seen in my life. And I posted a little video clip of it online. The receiver goes, you know, it's like a 15-yard out pattern. And Fenton put his hands on him but didn't obstruct him, impede him from going where he wanted to go. And then it was a miscommunication between the quarterback and the wide receiver because the ball goes another 20 yards down the field.
Right.
And, you know, the flag came in, and Fenton was, you know, incredulous there for a second. And that gave him a first down. That was a big play. That was a third down.
It was a big play. I started doing the, over.
Yeah. I thought there were a lot of uncatchables on interference. Yeah. Now, we did mug up a couple of times. I mean, I'll say that. But they were clearly throwing for the pass interference is what they were doing. I mean, it wasn't a real true attempt to complete the pass. It was just like, let's see if we can get a pass interference on this call.
As horrible as the calls were, we got a huge no call on the 2-point conversion, though, where Darius English tackled their quarterback.
Let me tell you something. Yeah, he made a great play because he read it all the way.
Right.
And then panicked at the very end and tackles the guy. And, right. I mean, you know,
they weren't going to complete that anyway, though. That ball wasn't going to be completed. I mean, it was underthrown, short. That's probably why they didn't call it. It was uncatchable.
I think they didn't. I think they were making up either for that interference call or a few plays before that. Their left tackle left about 15 minutes early out of his stance. And it's like the announcers were going crazy on all three of those. And, you know, on the false start, they're like, you know, I can't remember who the color guy was. He was just like, how do you miss that? How do you miss? Look at that. How do you miss that?
Right.
So they were brutal.
Bad group of officials.
But as there's, you know, we'll get back. We usually talk about offense first. We'll talk about the defense. As bad as things were, you know, we gave up 500 and something yards. They had 34 first downs. We had 13. Time of possession was like 38 minutes to 22 minutes, something along those lines.
Wow.
But for some reason, I felt kind of good about the defense. And I can't put the stats don't bear this out, but I thought, you know, Lamons played a pretty good game. I like Jamarcus King over on the other corner.
He caught a pass, by the way.
A ball hit him in the hands, and he caught it. This is definitely a step in the right direction. I was trying to think. I think that might be his second career interception, but he's dropped about 8. I mean, they've been, just hands of stone. I think the dude
caused a fumble and he had an interception. Now you got to give him, you know, you had a good game.
And a sack and another tackle for loss. He had a great game.
Our freshman defensive lineman, we had two freshmen both get their first sacks. I don't know. It was a tough offense to defend, especially for a group of young guys like we've got. And we made plays when we had to.
No. Hey, East Carolina is no slouch. I mean, not that fans of the ACC or anything, but they have won 6 straight ACC ball games. 6 straight.
Yeah, they're 6-2 in their last Power 5 games, and they're 6-0 against the ACC and 0-2 against the SEC.
Right. I mean, it's not like beating SC State like somebody beat this past Saturday. It's not like that.
Right. I mean, people hear East Carolina directional school, you know, it should be an automatic win for an SEC team. But man, East Carolina's tough. That was a good win. You know, as bad as we got beat up and down the field.
That being said, does anyone believe this is a good team we have?
No. I mean, woefully lacking on the offensive line. I mean, it was built up to be a strength. I know we're – can we switch to offense?
Yeah, let's go ahead.
Okay. It was built up to be a strength, and it's not. You know, I mean, third and one, fourth and one, how many times did we not make it? Several. I mean, yeah, we had a few holes here and there. We gained a few yards on the ground here and there. David Williams popped a couple runs, which was frankly nice to see. But there's just no dynamic. You know, you just don't feel like you're about to bust a big play. It feels like an effort every time we are able to generate any offense. Just
leads right into a Twitter question there, Buck.
Which one was that? We got a ton of Twitter questions. So which one were you talking about?
I don't have to be a couple of Twitter questions right on point. We had a couple of guys, and I'll look this up while we're talking, ask about is it fair to criticize coaching on the other line?
Yeah, there was a question about is it reasonable for people to be asking for a coaching change at O-line? And is it smart?
No.
It's talent.
It's talent. I mean, we got a bunch of guys playing on the O-line who are just under-talented. And we got a couple guys injured. But we're just not that good up front, and people just need to face that. That's why they have McElwain playing, because he can generate something with his legs on occasion.
But I feel bad. I've been pretty critical of David Williams, and he had, you know, one of his better games. Had 67 yards, but he had, I think, 45 of those on two carries. But there were a couple.
Caught a beautiful pass.
Yeah. There were a couple of times where he got the ball in his gut on the handoff, and there was just a defensive lineman just wrapped on him. You know, like one of those alien babies. You know, they get latched to the astronaut's face.
And I'll say that that's happened to him sort of an inordinate number of times in his career, I have to say. I mean, yeah.
Have y'all been following Cadence Gate?
No. Uh-uh.
Cadence Gate. This is the new big conspiracy theory. We've got a young quarterback in the shotgun. Everybody knows when we're snapping the ball. Yeah. As a matter of fact, we had a couple guys ask the coach about it in the press conference, and he seemed to lend credence to the theory that people have figured out our snap count. They know when we're going, and East Carolina was getting a huge jump on us. So they were trying to figure out a way to do that
on every single play. I mean, they're bringing them right out the gut. I mean, which they should have been doing. I mean, you know, we couldn't run the ball effectively, and they're bringing those guys every time. We have a true freshman quarterback. I mean, you know, it makes sense.
Yeah,
but I don't know. I mean.
Well, you know, going back to your point about the offense and about lack of skill players, I mean, we do not have a game breaker at tailback. We know that. A.J. Turner is not that guy. A.J. Turner is still a nice change of pace. He'll break a run here and there. You know, David Williams hopefully can be kind of a workhorse for us. You know, what I'm looking at now is the wide receivers. We know Bryan Edwards is a stud. We know that Deebo Samuel is not dependable because he's going to get hurt every week. So you start looking at some of these other guys. Was it Dreek Davis who made the nice catch along the sideline? They initially called out of bounds, and then they went back and reviewed it.
Yep.
He looks like a ball player. I mean, he looks like a ball player. And if you start looking at it, it's like, who looks good in pads? Who has a nice, smooth stride? Who, you know, looks natural out there? And G-Man's giving me a number. I don't know who you're talking about.
Can't tell what number this is.
35?
No, 81. 81.
Oh, your boy Hurricane Hurst. Hurricane.
Throw the ball to Hurst on every single play. I mean, the guy's a ball player. I mean, he ought to get 10 targets a game. I mean, really.
Man, are you related to him or something? We talk about the Hurricane every week.
I'm just telling you, the guy's a ball player. Did you see the catch on the second drive when he pulls in the ball on the sideline?
Yeah, it's a nice catch.
Yeah. I mean, and he caught the ball on the last, well, I called it a drive. It was two plays when we kicked the last field goal.
Yeah.
I mean, He's a player. I mean, I think
he's adorable, and his hair smells like flowers.
I don't care what it smells like. The dude can play. Throw him the football.
Throw him the ball. Hurricane Hayden Hurst. All right. And by the way, the last call by Kurt Roper, you know, I was critical of him from like the second series until the last, you know, the speed option they ran with David Williams. That was a great call because it seems like on every other short yardage third down that we had, we were diving the ball up the middle. I mean, it looks
with the quarterback
and just getting buried.
With the quarterback out of the shotgun. You're right. Dive on fourth and one out of the shotgun.
I think we are gonna have to get McElwain on the edge, whether it's run or pass.
Absolutely.
Because
I got a question.
He also doesn't look comfortable in the pocket either. He looks like he throws the ball a little better when he's on the move. G-Man has his hand raised. Go ahead.
Other than the victory formation,
yeah,
have we run a play under center this season?
I don't know. I don't recall seeing one.
Were you bothered that we weren't under center on that snap?
No, I was bothered that we weren't under center on like fourth and one. Do you remember the fourth and one where they ran McElwain on the little stutter step thing when the guys were in the backfield immediately? Yep. I mean, I just think you got to be able to – I just don't understand. And maybe this is just, you know, modern football and I'm a old curmudgeon. You know, but I don't understand how you can go through the entire spring, the entire fall, and not put in a formation, just the off formation, to run when you need it. You know,
just run a sneak, just like Connor Shaw used to do.
Understand why. It's like we can't do it because we've never tried it in practice.
Right.
I don't understand.
Yeah, get the man under center. Just fall forward. All right, so good win. We got Kentucky coming up this week. Let's go through some Twitter questions, and then we'll talk a little bit about Kentucky. T-Bone, are you still there? Because I see the ceiling.
I'm still here.
So our old friend B Click Clack has not asked us a question in a while. She says, "What does Muschamp eat for breakfast? I wonder."
Small animals.
He's like a Pop-Tart guy, I think. I think he grabs something like on the way out the door. Or maybe when he gets to the office, he's eating Pop-Tarts. What do you think, T-Bone?
What does Muschamp eat for breakfast?
Besides nails.
No, I'll tell you what he does. At night, before he goes to bed, he gets some almond milk and he pours it over oatmeal, cuts up a banana. Maybe a little peanut butter, some organic peanut butter.
Some chia seeds.
And he leaves that in the fridge overnight. And what before he goes to bed, he says to himself, "This is a gift I'm giving myself."
So T-Bone just actually told you what he eats for breakfast every day.
Exactly.
Because he won't stop talking about it and how good it is.
Yeah. Chia seeds. I'm not even sure I've ever heard of that before.
I don't know what chia seeds are.
Flax seeds. Chia seeds are good, man.
Flax. It's flax seeds, yes.
Gamecock Colonel at Bourbon Bias asks, and this is a good T-Bone question because he's so picky about his Mexican foods. Burritos, tacos, enchiladas, are they all cousins?
They're not cousins because some of them are corn tortillas and some are flour. So they're not related.
I've always said
that. And then you got some like the enchiladas that should have mole sauce on them, where the burritos should have more of a cheese covering. I don't know.
I've always been of the belief that all Mexican food is exactly the same. You just put a little different sauce or wrap it in a different type of shell, and
you woefully, woefully uninitiated.
So, what was it? G-Man, didn't you ask one time, it's like, hey, what do you like better, Moe's or Chipotle? And T-Bone went crazy. He's like, I don't eat that's any of like that the, crap.
The most G-Man question I've ever heard.
I thought it was a legit question.
It was a legit question.
I'll give you one further. I mean, I'll even throw Qdoba in there. You like Qdoba better?
I've never been to a Qdoba. We've got Willie's in Atlanta. Willie's is pretty good. So, T-Bone, will you just not set foot in an establishment like that?
I have actually not, and I need to say this, and I've never been in a Chipotle's. I've never been in a Moe's.
That's because where you live, they don't have them up there.
You actually have migrant workers cooking tacos on the side of the
Mexican,
road.
Right. If I want Mexican food, I have to go find a Mexican.
they wouldn't build a Chipotle. I mean, there's probably not a Chipotle within 100 miles of where you live.
Right. Why would they? I don't know why they would.
There's a lot of backlash against the Chipotles and Moe's of the world these days for some reason, man. I'm still on board. It's fast and easy and still tastes pretty good. I don't care if...
Just like you, big
guy. Fast and easy, baby.
It tastes like crap.
I think he's easy, but he's definitely not fast anymore. I mean, he is slow.
Yeah.
Have you seen him run lately? Oh my gosh, it's terrible.
At some point, we need to wrap this thing up, or else talk about football.
You can time me in the 40 with a sundial. Jorge Brosada says, "Put these names in order of most likely to transfer after the season." All right, listen closely: Mon Denson, Lorenzo Nunez, Michael Scarnecchia, Terry Guger.
It is three.
Scarnecchia first?
3-2-4-1.
You think Mon Denson is least likely to transfer out of those four?
Yeah, he ain't transferring. No.
See, I think Scarnecchia is probably number one. I'd say Denson is two, Nunez three, Guger four. And I actually asked Terry Guger how you pronounce his last name last year, and he told me it might be Guger. I can't remember. But,
I think it's Guger, right. But he actually
he started
Saturday, though.
Yeah.
He goes into games. I think Nunez will hang around. I think the other two guys are gone.
Yeah. Patrick Warren, PLWARRE on Twitter says, "Do you feel better or worse about the upcoming Kentucky and A&M games than you did 2 years ago?" And I almost feel like this is a trick question.
Yeah, I do too.
Because I felt really, really good about the A&M game 2 years ago that we got blown out because we were coming off an 11-2 season. So I definitely feel worse about that game this year. And the Kentucky game 2 years ago, I would have thought, yeah, that's a win. Whereas this week, I feel like it's a toss-up. I'd say I feel worse about both of those games this season than I would have 2 years ago.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think he might be aiming for something we're missing there.
Yeah, but
I mean,
Kentucky's such a. We'll talk a little bit about Kentucky now. Kentucky Commonwealth Stadium is just like nightmarish to me because I've got 2010 and 2014 in my head.
Well, Randall
just
Cobb,
two of the worst. Oh, God, those games.
And DJ Swearinger, what are you doing on that play? I still remember it to this day.
Yeah. Well, do you remember that Kentucky loss? Do you remember what week that was?
No.
That was the week after we beat number one Alabama.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So
it started out like a house of fire. I mean, Lattimore
was tearing it
like
up.
Three plays, and it was ridiculous. We're killing them.
Yeah, I remember I wrote about that the next day. I'm like, this like taints everything because we will never be able to think of that Alabama win beating the number one team in the country without thinking about going to Kentucky and losing to that crap team the next week. But thank God, with the benefit of time, that is actually not true. I never think about Kentucky game.
Right, it's not. But this is also Billy Reid week.
Yeah,
if you remember, not so famous sports columnist Billy Reid.
Yeah.
Who years ago wrote that we did not even belong in the conference and we were an embarrassment.
Yeah.
I always think about that before the Kentucky game.
So speaking of not belonging in the conference, I've got a series of questions from Jarrett Davis. He's Jarrett D0716. And Jarrett was just pissed this afternoon, I think, when he wrote these questions. I don't know if he was actually mad about football or if something, you know, something personal happened that made him angry, but he's got like three angry questions for us. The first one is, what's the benefit of dragging the team and fans to a neutral site game at Bank of America Stadium, in parentheses, a poorly operated dump? So, Jarrett, not a fan of Bank of America Stadium. You guys went to Bank of America a couple of years ago when we opened with East Carolina. Good experience? Bad experience?
You know, horrible experience to the extent that it was half full of East Carolina fans.
Yeah.
Which I don't recommend you spend any time with anyone associated with that school.
So G-Man, tell me why we are playing a game at Bank of America Stadium to open the season again next year.
It's all about recruiting. It's all about the Jimmies and the Joes. Charlotte is in North Carolina, where there's, you know, a close geographic state to us, and there's a lot of football players in Charlotte. We're up there for the Mallard Creeks of the world, for the Mecklenburg Counties of the world. We're trying to get those athletes, and it's an hour and 15 minutes from Charlotte to Columbia. There's nobody else closer than us in a major college realm to those athletes. So that's why we're up there, to get the exposure and to get in front of those folks. Plus, there's a ton of Gamecock alumni up there that we want to get in front of to reward. I didn't do that as well. But, hey, there you go.
That's all right. That's a good answer. Good answer. Hot sports take. So Jared also asked, why was our 2016 schedule so unbalanced? Why is our open date before UMass? And are we political losers in the SEC? And I
short answer is yes.
Yeah, I think you answered your own question there at the end, Jarrett. We are. I mean, we're still new. We're not a blue blood in the SEC by any stretch of the imagination, and we're gonna get the scraps. And at the same time, we are thrilled to be part of the Southeastern Conference, I believe. So we got to take the bad with the good sometimes. Jarrett also asked, why is our 2017 open date prior to a home game against Vandy? Well, that's because they had to make sure that Alabama and Tennessee and LSU and Georgia and all those guys got their schedules right before they got to us and Vandy. So,
yeah, and I think just the general answer here that we're kind of hitting around is we need to quit worrying about this. This is the way that it is.
Right.
Don't obsess on it. Just don't worry about it. Don't rail against it. It's, you know, we're lucky to be in this conference. Let's enjoy the ride.
It is what it is.
In the grand scheme of things, right? I mean, the grand scheme of things, none of that stuff is that big a deal. We just go get some players, win some games, and nobody cares when your open date is.
Yeah, we got to play Georgia and Tennessee and Florida and Kentucky and Vandy and Missouri and, you know, two of six teams from a brutal Western division every year. So I think we're going to feel like we're getting screwed in some form or fashion every year when you look at
I remember 1985 or 1986, we played at Nebraska, we played at Georgia, we played at Miami. We never could quit playing these teams. So, you know, it's not any better just because you're independent.
Scott Rogers says, how does your podcast compete with other Gamecock podcasts, considering there are more hours of Gamecock podcasts in a week than actual hours in a week? And we agree with you, Scott. And the way we compete with that is we put on the best damn Gamecock podcast on the planet. You even hear dogs shaking themselves off after a good scratch behind the ear.
No, I mean, that was G-Man.
That's the kind of additional coverage that we bring you on TRC Unleashed.
And by the way, I want to say this. We don't really care about these other podcasts. We podcast for the joy of the podcast, right, guys?
We don't care
if there's three of you listening or 300 of you listening.
That's right. Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, so take that, all you other people, podcasters. Kay Bruce, at Kay Bruce, says, Muschamp versus Lou Piniella versus Bobby Knight in a battle royal, assuming all are in peak physical form, who you got?
Bobby Knight.
Bobby Knight.
I'm going Lupinella. Lupinella was, you know, peak physical form was probably not. I don't know that Lupinella ever had a peak physical form. I mean, he used to like smoke cigarettes in the dugout of the Yankees games, and you know, he was that dude was tough though.
I think Bobby Knight fight dirty,
but it's a battle royale. It's a professional wrestling thing. There's going to be chairs involved, and Knight is going to introduce the chairs to this. You know,
the funny thing is, none of us chose Will Muschamp. How about that?
Nah.
Is it because we're old? We're so old. We remember Pinella and Knight so well.
Yeah, I don't think we know Muschamp well enough yet. It's right. Early.
Jack Key, JACKKEE 111 says, "What is the likelihood we can establish a running game outside of McElwain this year?" Probably not good, Jack. Probably not good. Based on what we talked about earlier with the offensive line and really
And maybe I should just give this answer for everything. You know, I feel like we need to quit whining about this. We need to quit talking about it. We shouldn't rail against it. It is just what we are.
It's
where
it
we fit in. I remember back in 1985, we couldn't run the ball then either.
Well, I think if we were destined to have a good running team, we wouldn't be running the offense that we're running. You know, I think I think we're trying to kind of trick you a little bit with what we're doing, because that's what we've got to do. I don't see us having the horses up front to be a power running team.
Feathered Warrior, friend of the show. He was actually the one who asked earlier, is it reasonable for people to be asking for a coaching change at O-line? He also says, and this question is really going to go over well, should South Carolina be dominating in men's soccer for the mere fact that we're SEC? I mean, SEC doesn't even participate in soccer as a conference, do we? Aren't we part of
Conference USA. Yeah, and really, I mean, soccer is not really a sport that people dominate.
It's an invalid question.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, I get Feather's point. We were a really good soccer program, like back in the late 80s, early 90s, and Mark Burson. I actually did go back and look at our record like the last 5 years, and it is horrible. And you just have to wonder how long you're going to let Mark Burson run that program. What are we doing? We're talking – all right, that's like 30 seconds more soccer talk than we've ever done ever do again.
Hey, go back and edit that crap out, please.
Yeah, next we're going to be talking about, you know, English League soccer like everybody pretends to be interested in and –
How about those Montreal Canadiens? Let's talk about them.
Let's talk about the NHL.
I don't think that's soccer.
So Mark W. Chapman on Twitter says, "How are you? Thanks for taking my tweet." You're welcome, Mark. Appreciate your politeness. When's the last time you called into a coach's show? I'll hang up and listen. I personally have never called into a coach's show.
I have never called into a coach's show, but I did call in and talk to who's the SEC guy. I called in and talked about Tannehill a couple of years back.
You Feinbaum?
No, it wasn't Feinbaum. It was the guy before Feinbaum, the guy they ran off.
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know what you're talking about.
National show?
I talked about Tannehill. Oh, yeah.
A couple of years ago?
Yeah. This is going nowhere because I can't remember the guy's name and I can't put it in context.
You know, Tannehill was our quarterback like in the mid 90s, right?
Yeah. No, his name almost came to me. But the point of the show was, you remember these great flamboyant quarterbacks that you never heard from again. Who was even that guy at South Carolina? I don't even remember his name. If you can tell me who that guy is from South Carolina, call us right now. And I'm like, he's got to be talking about Tannehill. So I called him up. Right. We talked about Steve Tannehill, we talked about Hank Campbell, we talked about the movie The Program. I was on for like 5 minutes.
And that led to your podcasting career.
Yeah, that's where it all began, man.
Steve Jewell, S. Jewell 321. Describe in one word your feelings toward Muschamp on announcement day and one word when you think of him today. So on announcement day, I would say hopeful. Today, I would say hopeful. I don't know. I'm not particularly surprised by anything that has happened so far this season. Yeah. So nothing has diminished my hopefulness, I guess.
I was going to say, I think he's doing the best he can with what he's got to work with.
One word, G-Man.
Oh, one word? Solid.
All right. Is that their announcement or now? I guess it's now. T-Bone, what's your one word?
I'm gonna follow the instructions because obviously G-Man wasn't listening.
I wasn't listening, sorry.
When they announced, my thought was competent, and my thought now is competent.
Okay, you think he's competent?
He's competent, but it's kind of like a trail off in like competent.
Competent-ish.
Let me go back and revise. Because I wasn't paying attention. I apologize.
Here we go.
No, I mean, I was pleased. Would be on the announcement day, and right now I would say optimistic.
Yeah. All right. Well, good.
That's good.
Mark, Woodleaf WOODLIEF 322 says, "Hi, we're so lucky to have you as our podcaster. I'll hang up and listen with a question mark." So that's like an anchorman question. what is he? Who's been messing with the teleprompter? Let's see. It looks like we've had a bunch of questions roll in. No, maybe we didn't. We just had a lot of retweets and favorites. So that's it for the.
That's what's called a humble brag for you kids out there.
Ah, it's just so many questions pouring in. So popular is what we are. Anyway, we do thank you for listening to our podcast, Kentucky on Saturday. Any final thoughts? Any topics you wanted to bring to the table?
I just really hate playing those guys.
Yeah.
It's always a stressful time playing Kentucky. They always seem to have some guy that we've never heard of. Who was that dude a couple years ago who ran for like 200 yards?
Jojo Kemp.
Wildcat.
Jojo Kemp.
Right. There's always some guy like Jojo Kemp who you've never heard of who we turn into the SEC Player of the Week.
Right.
Yep. Here we go, because we've got to just stand by. We should start a pool or something, a drinking game. I don't know how you would do it, but who are we going to break an NCAA record with this week?
Right.
I mean, yeah, exactly. Because, yeah, East Carolina, this guy catches 22 passes. I mean, remember that one year back in the 90s when every back ran for, or, you know, some
Madre Hill, Mo Williams.
Yeah, Kentucky. Yeah, yeah.
Who was the guy? Robert Edwards at Georgia. I mean, right. That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it just goes on and on. I mean, so, I don't know. I'm worried about who that guy's going to be this week. They have some quarterback who's a nobody. That's probably going to be him.
Yeah, Steven Johnson. He's a junior college transfer, and it looks like Drew Barker may not play. And he'll probably put up 450 yards and 7 touchdowns on us. How about some rubber chicken awards? We didn't do that at the end of the game. G-Man looks like he's ready to tell us who his rubber chicken award for the East Carolina game is.
Yeah, I'm going to give my rubber chicken award to a much maligned Gamecock over the years who did not have a spectacular game, but he made a couple big plays. We've talked about him before a couple times. Mr. David Williams. Big play at the end of the game to seal it, and a great catch and a couple other good runs. The guy's taking a lot of punches. I'm going to give it to Williams.
T-Bone's upset. That was going to be his man.
That was my man, and I thought there was no chance that anybody was going to take him.
So I'm going to go I'll give you 10 seconds to think about it, and I'll tell you who I'm going to go with. I'm going to go with DJ Wonnum, who got his first sack on Saturday, and I just wanted to say the name DJ Wonnum out loud. So
T-Bone? I guess I'll go with – this is who I really intended all along. That was all a lie earlier. With Christopher Columbus, St. Ignatius, Montpelier, Cornelius Lamont.
It was very French of you.
Yes. I'm not sure if you know his background. He is very French himself.
All right. Your rubber chicken awards will be in the mail, fellas. Congratulations. All right. So Saturday, Kentucky. We hope to be back with you next week if we can find time to do this crap again. So today is, I will say on a serious note, today is the 6th anniversary of the death of Kenny McKinley.
Yikes.
Who was just a great Gamecock. What a fun, fun football player to watch. Any quick Kenny McKinley memories?
Oh, man.
What do you think of?
The Houston game.
Yeah.
Yes.
Man.
When he walked into, he kind of high-stepped into the end zone when we went up by like 2 scores right near the end.
And then he hurls. Yeah. You remember what happened? He hurled the ball into the stands. He got a 15-yard penalty.
Yeah.
And after the game, they were asking Spurrier who got game balls, and Spurrier said, "Well, we were going to give Kenny a game ball, but he threw his in the stands." So I think about that. I think about when he was a true freshman against Tennessee. You know, that big groundbreaking victory, the Josh Brown field goal. He caught 4 or 5 passes on just like quick slants from Blake Mitchell. And he was, it was like, that was kind of his coming out party. It was like, who is this kid and why is he catching so many passes? You know, he was great. Great, great, great football player for South Carolina. I guess he's still the all-time leading receiver at South Carolina. Catches,
sounds right.
Yards.
Maybe.
I don't think anybody's broken it. But
he was fun to watch. You're right, though. He was fun to watch.
Yeah. So, anyway, RIP Kenny. And that'll do it for this edition of TR Unleashed. Everybody's tired, ready to go to bed. I got to go edit some podcast. So thanks again for joining us, everybody. I'm Buck for T-Bone and the G-Man. This is TRC Unleashed 89. We'll talk to you soon. Watch to annihilate the same time.